Blog Talk Radio.
Now what the fuck is his name?
Ghost Dog.
What?
Ghost Dog. Ghost Dog?
He said Ghost Dog.
Yeah, he calls himself Ghost Dog. I don't know, a lot of these black guys today, these gangster type guys, they all got names like that they make up for themselves.
Is that true?
Sure. He means like the rappers. You know, the rappers, they all got names like that. Snoop Doggy Dogg, Ice Cube, Q-Tip, Method Man. My favorite was always Flavor Flav from Public Enemy. He got the funky fresh fly flavor. Live lyrics in the bank of reality. I kick the flyers through maneuver technicality. Do a dope track. I love that guy.
I don't know anything about that. But it makes me think about Indians. You know, they got names like Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Running Bear, Black Elk.
That kind of shit.
Yeah, Indians, niggas, same thing.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today into this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's Abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
I never get tired of the applause, folks. Welcome to the Midweek in Review edition of AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. AfroNerd Radio. The time, 7:02 p.m., December 19th, 2012, in the year of our Lord. Folks, we have a lot to get into. Actually, we're expecting a second-round visit by noted author and former line producer for WBAI / Pacific Radio, Norman Kelly. Norman Kelly is returning once again in a few moments. But before we do that, before we get into the discourse into the colloquium, we've got to get into the funk or the black rock or the urban alternative. This is Hide and Seek again, Hide and Seek by the Divine Secret. We'll be back. Let's groove.
Close your eyes, count to three. I
1-800-821-2119. This is your host, D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afro-Nerd. Where is Captain James Tiberius Kirk? Kirk, stop messing with those lower-tier Negroes. Captain, time for the bridge. Let's go.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
I'm back with a vengeance. Let's
go. Kirk, stop messing with those lower-tier Negroes. Stop it. that's my best William Shatner impersonation. I'm going to run this in the gym this weekend for our inner sanctum, inner circle, Sally V. Sally V from the planet Dominica. Where is your Dominican buddies? Where did he go? I'm going to run that, man. I'm going to run it. Folks, once again, welcome to Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. As always, we try to give you the best that we can as far as our information, our entertainment. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620. I believe we have our round two guest, and I don't have the appropriate, you know what, we're going to have a different sound effect for him. Let's beam on in, Norman Kelly.
I like that. Got that Spock feeling to it.
Well, listen, I was probably the only black man that's actually done an attempt at a William Shatner impersonation. So, you know, be that as it may, that's all the nerd I can give. Welcome once again. Thanks for stopping by, Norman. We wanted to give you your full, you know, indulge you once again because you gave us a pretty good showing Sunday. And it felt short. The Sunday shows just feel short.
Mm-hmm.
So Wednesdays you do a longer show. And this deal with the Sandy Hook tragedy is taking on so many different dimensions. I wanted to get you back on it again. So, and of course, Captain is in full effect. You're much better now, Captain. You were persona non grata because of your illness. Are you feeling better, sir?
Well, I'm back up to strength, you know, charged up.
That's good.
I'm ready.
All right,
go.
You're back.
Gentlemen, let's get into this thing. Of course, last week there was a grave tragedy. 20 children in a grade school, Sandy Hook grade school, killed by this crazed, possibly autistic gunman. And I touched on this a little bit on Sunday's show, and now I'm hearing more shows starting to get into this angle. And I'm telling you honestly, it's bothering me the more I read about this thing, where you're starting to see a glaring amount of attention. And it should be attention to this tragedy. But it's as if the tragedies that occur in New Jersey, in Newark, in Camden, Brownsville, New York, East New York, St. Louis, I can go down the line. Oakland, where we've seen Chicago is hot, shouting out Sergio Mims. I heard a statistic about upwards of 400 young people below the age of 21 have been killed by gun violence since September. Since September. Of this year. And that did not gain or garner the attention that these 20 white kids in a Tony section of Connecticut did not garner that kind of attention. Now something's going to be done. What are your thoughts on this, Norman? What, am I hallucinating, or what's going on?
Well, As somebody once said, I think it was George Orwell once put it, all of us are equal, but some of us are more equal than others. And in regards to collateral damage, let's call a spade, the lives of African Americans or people of color, Hispanics, are not as highly as valued as those of our fellow white citizens. Now, I don't take any particular glee or satisfaction in this at all, However, if there's any good to come out of this, maybe this will be a wake up call. This is the wake up call, because after all, blacks are 12%, 13% of the population, Hispanics are 14% of the population, and when something happens to us, it's just considered the normal course of things. Now the chickens have come home to roost, and people are beginning to wake up that this is a serious problem in this country. And people have been knowing that this has been going on for a while, but now in the bucolic setting of Connecticut, it has come to pass.
Yeah, Captain, we haven't heard from you because of your illness. What's your formal thoughts on this tragedy and this take on it? Because the next story, well, I'm going to play a clip in a moment, but there's another story that's attached to this involving a Texas Thai restaurant owner that said some quote-unquote out-of-pocket things that have been deemed racist. His business is in jeopardy. But what he said may have a kernel of truth, but I would not have said it the way he did. He was a little too politically incorrect. You can't disregard death regardless of the race of the people. He's a little too honest, I think. But he may be onto something. So what are your thoughts on this, Captain?
Well, I have a little different take on the tragedy. Here's the thing when we're dealing here with America. America has a lot of problems, has a lot of issues. But how we deal with these problems and issues, what we like to do, we treat the symptom. We have drug problems in this country, all right? So what do? We lock up people more and more and give a stiffer sentencing for drugs. That doesn't stop you from taking drugs, using drugs, or selling drugs. That's one. That's what we do, all right? Next, not only with drugs, we see what's happening now with the gun situation, all right? Or should I back up a little bit? Let me back up a little bit. Death penalty. Okay, we have the death penalty in certain states in this country. The death penalty has never stopped anybody from killing anybody. But, of course, we lock up more and more people in this country. Yes, something has to be done. The United States locks up more people than anybody else. Also, according to some statistical analysis, people say, I think this is a bit high. I give you my own analysis on this, but they say 1 in 5 Americans have mental issues. I think that's a bit high. I probably would say 1 in 10. That's 10% of the population. That means 30 million. That means 30 million people, if they're pushed over their edge, maybe they don't take that medication or something like that, along those lines, they could go off. That's a lot of people here in this country. So we have serious underlying issues that we're not addressing the root cause. When something like this happens, we have a response that treats the symptom. It's a very tragic situation, but we need to start addressing the root cause. Why Americans seem to be crazier than everybody else? What's going on here in America? These type of crazy nonsense doesn't happen in places as big as China, considering all the people that they have, as big as India. Why is something like this happening here in a place, America? That's supposed to be the land of the free, the land of opportunity, the land where anybody can come to and do anything.
Well, that's the question
I have to ask.
I think what you're striking at, Captain, is that, there's just a lot of social dislocation and social alienation in America. I mean, look, we have, we pride ourselves on being a highly competitive society, blah, 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 and everything is geared toward getting things. Either more money, more status, whatever, more drugs, blah, blah, blah. But But as Karl Marx once said, what kind of society is it when you find several, he said several thousand, but several million people in deepest loneliness? But you cannot admit that. To admit to having a mental problem or emotional problem is like failure. Financial failure is one thing. Athletic failure, one thing. Sexual failure is one thing. But admitting to, like, a possible mental problems or emotional problems, I mean, that is the ultimate failure. And that is something which a lot of Americans don't want to admit. And, you know, we consistently, from what I'm understanding, we have been consistently downgrading and defunding mental health outlets in this country. Well, now we know. Now we see the consequence, particularly for our, particularly for the young men in this society. What is going on?
Again, no, folks. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean nobody's asked the question. I mean everybody keeps saying, "Is it video games? Is it guns? Or is not enough God? And you know, America has become a godless society." But I think there's really something deeper going on in this society. It's just that
Absolutely.
You have a lot of alienation going on. And how do most men and most Americans deal with problems? Well, they go get a gun.
One quick thing just to our listening audience. Again, you're listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek and Review edition. We have our political correspondent, contributor Norman Kelly in the house, second round. We saw some callers that kind of came and came out. The water is warm, folks. Feel free to come on in. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I want to say something real quick, Norm and Captain. You know, I think we're being still a little too politically correct with our discourse here. What I mean by that is that I'm going to tell you what I've been seeing. When you look at the newspaper, when you see the media attention, I'm seeing these op-ed pieces where they're entitled, "How did this happen? When did we become this way?" And I'm looking at this, I'm looking at the news, I'm reading the newspaper articles, and I'm in disbelief, and it's getting to the point where I'm becoming frustrated in the sense of, wait a minute. The block has been hot for decades in black and brown communities of color. All of a sudden, we're talking about the mental state of the purse. No one is asking or has ever asked. No one has ever asked about the mental state of the gangbangers that are attacking these inner city communities. Matter of fact, I remember seeing something within the last few days. The top story, the front page, I think it was the Daily News, maybe Monday. The top story was, again, more about what's happening with Sandy Hook. Page 18 was a story in Harlem where groups of black teens are shooting at each other, and a 57-year-old woman is caught in the crossfire. She gets shot in the back. She survives, but she gets shot in the back. And then somewhere else in the neighborhood, another separate altercation involved two or three grown men chasing down a 17-year-old boy and shooting him in the face. He survived, but he was holding his bloody face on his stoop while his mother passed out hearing the news. This was on page 18, and it's another day. It's another day. So it is becoming somewhat insulting to hear and to see these op-eds about when did this happen to us.
Well, let me read you this quote. Quote, "Have you heard any politician going on an anti-gun rant when you heard about urban violence? Does it ever happen? I'm asking. These stories out of Chicago were happening daily. George was highlighting them, but take your pick. The Rodney King incident, whatever. The Watts riots, pick one. Post-Katrina looting in New Orleans. Was the anti-gun control out in force there? They never are they? I wonder why that is. Why is the anti-gun people never use violence in urban neighborhoods as an example of why we have to get rid of guns? Guess who said that? Rush Limbaugh."
Yeah, yeah. You know something? I actually heard a clip of this
mm-hmm.
on. I can't recollect the young lady's show, but she is a liberal show. And actually, she's a comedian, but she's also has a liberal or progressive radio show. And she played that clip that you referenced from Rush Limbaugh, and she tried to clown it. This is on the progressive side. She somewhat tried to clown it, but I thought what he said was you know, even if it comes from someone like Rush Limbaugh, if Hitler says 2 + 2 = 4, it doesn't stop it from being 4.
Well, the question you have to also ask, when did he ever say anything about this? See, the trouble with this is it's not that it's not accurate. It is. But he's just using it for invidious reasons. He's using it as a club over the head of people who are calling for gun control now. Because now they're insincere. I mean, when these
well, they
black
are.
People... Well, I don't know if
they're
being... Well, look.
There's something I want to interject.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure.
All right. So just to answer D-Bud's question, we know the mental state of the gang member. All right, I'm going to take a quote from an old school gangster that I met one time from the 70s. And he said to me, or should I say it's a statement, he said, we weren't crazy. We did what we had to do because that's what we knew. He said, once you got to the 90s, these guys that are running around calling themselves Bloods and Crips, they were just crazy. He said, I'm scared of them. And I was a gangster in the 70s. It's a different mind state. Okay? It's a different mind state. And also, next thing to add on to that, traditionally here in America, what do they always do? Whatever happens in the black and brown communities, they go, oh, whatever. Then when it spills out of the black and brown, that's when they say we have an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going on in the black and brown for the longest. But you see, if they were really wise, they would clamp down on what happens in the black and brown and realize eventually it would spill over into the other neighborhoods, regardless. That's the reality of it, you know? And that's
well, you know,
reality.
Don't – this whole issue – about, you know, the lack of a response to what's been going on in black America and Latino America, don't worry. It will come up at some point because somebody's going to raise this as an issue. It will come up at some point because now people are going to say, look, where were you when all this stuff was going on in our communities? Well, you know, even Jack Tapper asked the president, where were you? Because he had mentioned this as an issue years ago. And Jack Tapper at the White House press briefing said, well, where were you, Mr. President? And Obama said, well, I was busy being president.
Yeah, I also heard that clip. I'll tell you
mm-hmm.
what. Let me go to this quick clip. It's a rather lengthy clip. I'm going to cut it at some point. This is a clip from the Melissa Harris Perry show. She's not hard on the eyes, Dr. Perry, but
mm-hmm.
it's a progressive program. There's some things about it that I have a problem with. I know that Michael Eric Dyson, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, was also on there, so you can imagine how I feel about that.
Yeah.
But at least they are getting around to this issue of urban violence and making
mm-hmm.
that connection. I will say this. If you're going to make one distinction, and it's a very small one, very paper thin, this is a massacre, an incidental one-time massacre. Like, boom, 26 kids or 20 kids are killed, one shot. If you tabulate in a month or in 2 weeks in the hood, you'll come up with the same figure or even surpass that figure. So it's a matter of, it's still a matter of how it happens or the number.
And who it happens to.
Well, yeah, that's obvious. But if you tabulate the numbers are still pretty stark. It's still not really enough of an excuse to disregard it. So I want to go to this clip. Let's go to this clip for about a couple of minutes. And then we'll come back. And actually, since you brought up President Obama, let's get into this whole NRA deal, too, because now I don't think it's fair to place blame on him. All of a sudden now, listen, well, you know what? I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's go to this clip, and then we'll come back about Barack Obama, the NRA, and gun control.
Mm-hmm.
1 second.
When the conversation in our nation turns to gun violence, it most often stems from the headline-making incidents. They are the stories of mass shootings like the horror that was visited on Newtown, Connecticut yesterday, as well as to Aurora, Colorado, and Oak Creek, Wisconsin earlier this year. They are the stories involving celebrities that make a professional sports world stand up and take notice. There is no diminishing the impact and the tragedy of these experiences. They need to be part of our understanding as we undertake the difficult work about violence in society and gun policy at both the local and federal level. But so too should we be discussing the losses that come and go on our city streets on a daily and nightly basis. The gun violence that rarely warrants the national media's eye, but decimates innocent lives all the same. Take the epic number of gunshot deaths in Chicago, which had surpassed 400 homicides in September. To date, Chicago has suffered at least 425 homicides in this year alone. And those are just the ones that are gun-related, including most recently the shooting death last Sunday of 16-year-old Jeffrey Stewart. Like Jeffrey, 117 of those gun victims, 117 this year alone, were under 21, and now they're gone. It's not just Chicago. In my home, in New Orleans, 174 murders so far this year as of last night, most of which are gunshot deaths. 512 homicides have been recorded in Los Angeles for the year. As of earlier this month, 75% of those deaths resulted from gunshot wounds. These are the gun-related homicides that get treated as routine, tragic but expected. And yet, they need to be included when we talk about Newtown, Connecticut, because their victims are just as real. Joining me again, Ari Melber, Michael Eric Dyson, Joy Reid, and Dr. Jeff Gadir. Ari, I wanted to come to you first on this one.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on something Joy was just saying, and what you just introduced is such an important topic. You know, if you look at the research on childhood development, one of the things we see is the exposure that children have to what we would consider adult themes, in particular notions of instability, insecurity, risk, violence, and sex.
Yep.
And throughout our history in many different cultures, we've always had this line between children and adults, and one of the lines is their exposure. And so in the research, what you see is if they've had overexposure through life experience, that is, unavoidable violence in their life, or through media, which is why we get back to the conversation about journalism and entertainment, yep. That can dramatically change how the children feel. So that's part of the trauma here, and obviously our hearts go out to what all these children and families are dealing with. But that bridges to, I think, the part of the point you wanted to introduce, which is there are many other places in this country where the cat has long been out of the bag,
yep.
because violence is a part of the daily routine. And I would not try to go on television and quantify the different pain. I don't
right.
think anyone's trying to do that.
No.
But it is a fact that the country right now is looking at this tragedy and this murder of 27 people.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a simultaneous fact that 32 people are killed by guns every day in this country. So while we understand exactly how terrible this is and why the story of it and the way it happened
yep.
is so dramatic and we're rushing to it and the president's speaking to it,
yep.
it's also true as a policy matter that if 27 people dying is something that connotes the president's attention or should demand our attention and action, well, then every day
yes.
is this day, as
yep.
you were saying, in all around the country.
And we heard the president. I want to listen to this again, just in case, as people were listening, particularly the emotion of the president. You may have missed that when he spoke yesterday, he did, in fact, include some of this chronic violence. So let's listen for just a moment.
As a country, we have been through this too many times. Whether it's an elementary school in Newton or a shopping mall in Oregon or a temple in Wisconsin or a movie theater in Aurora or a street corner in Chicago, these neighborhoods are our neighborhoods and these children are our children.
Michael, or a...
All right, folks. It's a pretty lengthy clip. You get the gist. I really wanted to just showcase that Melissa Harris Perry's show, again on MSNBC, that they were making the connection, and maybe we might see more of the media actually address the connection between the urban violence and automatic weapons as a centerpiece for saying, hey, wait a minute, we've been here before, it's just not, the faces are a little darker.
Well, you know, the mainstream media is for the mainstream, which is predominantly, you know, white America. So they're not going to pick up on that immediately. They'll go through the routine of looking at the young children who have been killed, looking at the lost lives of the adults who try to save them, blonde hair and blue eyes and all that. And then hopefully the job of independent media, cable, is also to be saying, and your show is to be saying, hey, what about these other folks? What about the rest of the American family? What about the other corners in America? I mean, hopefully this is what is going on. The president did mention Chicago, should have mentioned New Orleans. I think Camden collected goo gobs of guns the other day from buybacks. So this is slowly going on, hopefully. But, you got to keep pressing it and making an issue out of it.
Well, if it's Camden, and Camden, again, the block is hot, and I believe there was talk of cutting their police force.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that about a year ago?
I think there was something recently on National Public Radio where they actually did talk about it. I can't remember what show, but I heard a police chief or something to that effect actually talking about cutting back on the Camden force. I mean, this is what's going on in this country.
Can you imagine cutting back a force, a police force, in one of the most dangerous cities in the country?
But that's okay, because you know what we're going to do? We're going to arm the teachers.
Well, that's how we'll rectify this, we'll arm the teachers. I do want to center around President Obama, because now we're hearing, actually I was listening to Rob Redding, I referenced Rob Redding quite a bit, and I'm a frequent caller on the show. And now he has his sights, I hate to use the term crosshairs considering what's happened, but for the sake of a poor analogy, he has his crosshairs with Obama in the sense of, just as you noted, now they're saying, where has he been on this gun control issue? And I think it is patently unfair.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's patently unfair because, and people, let's be completely honest here. This man of color has taken the helm for the number one spot in this country. Since 2009, there's been this whole trope of he's going to take our guns.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been taking it. So people have been stockpiling automatic weapons in record numbers, purchasing weaponry in record numbers since his first day at office. And he has not really done anything to indicate that he was going to take the quote unquote take your guns away.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened, though, is that during his presidency, the violence has escalated with these implosions, these Midwestern, or in this case now, Northeastern white implosions, where you are seeing massacres of people, and now the youngest and the more innocent are being killed rather blatantly. So this has been a long time coming. So you can't blame the man in the sense that now there's no room to go on this issue now. The NRA has been silent. They've been silent during this now. Now we're dealing with children. I think now they might be just coming out to say something now. But they weren't around for the Wisconsin shooting. They weren't around for the Aurora, Colorado shootings, the Fort Hood shootings. They were not around. We're dealing with young toddlers, young children, and now the NRA, they're up against the wall. There's no room for them to go. And Obama, now he's going to have to take your guns away. But he wasn't trying to.
Well, I mean, I wish he had said something about that. I mean, you should have told Tapper that, hey, Tapper, remember as soon as I got the job, the guns spiked up. If I tried to do anything, it would have been, it would have been Armageddon, So now that the NRA has his back up against the wall, because, look, it just does not look good. It looks bad.
Well, there goes the hypocrisy. There goes the dishonesty.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that exchange as well, and in the back of my head, I'm saying, wait a minute, why can't there be any discussion of Why was there a rush to buying all this weaponry in the first place because there was a black man in office? Why was that a catalyst for this to begin with?
They're not admitting
that you had the Tea Party movement. They showed up with guns.
Yeah.
When the president was speaking. So I mean, these people. Listen, these people wanted their guns.
Mm-hmm.
You have a conservative-controlled, well, not Senate, but House of Republicans. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The House, or a conservative-controlled House. The Republicans are running the show up until recently.
Yeah.
This is what they wanted. And he let them have what they wanted until they dropped the ball.
Well, now you know that old saying, but you give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. This is, to a certain degree, which is what's going on. I mean, like, we've let the country go. So this country has gotten so extreme now, so extreme. People don't want any government. They want all the guns in the world. They don't want taxes. Well, this is what you're getting now. You know, and the more Obama acts like a rational, normal human beings, you know, all he has to do is say, "And look, folks, look who could take my place, ladies and gentlemen."
Well, you know, I know the captain wanted to come in. There's one quick thing I was thinking. It's another somewhat undercurrent racist theme, is that we've had liberals in office or progressives in office before, but if you have a black progressive in office, that means that he's really liberal. That's where this whole, because they didn't do this when Clinton was in office. I don't recollect doing this when Carter was in office. This whole deal of needing to get our guns. Only until this black...
Oh, are you forgetting the militia movement that was going on, that was being stirred up by the right during the Clinton administration?
Right, not to this degree where we're talking about a black liberal. I never heard anyone... actually vocalize. I know the period you're talking about, but I never heard anyone actually vocalize they're going to take our guns away. We actually, you know, we want our country back, and it's more talk of less government. We want less government interference. This has been heightened.
Well, I think there was just
frenzied,
as much.
Hold on a second. To a frenzied level with a black liberal.
Well, I think there is almost just as much as this stuff going on during the Clinton years. However, to concede to your point, it's been heightened because now you have a black commander-in-chief. And because you talk about them clinging to their guns and religion, that became to be the signal, oh, he's going to take away our guns. I mean, I've noticed that Obama has said almost less about guns than any other president, and yet it has spiked during his presidency.
And
so,
the Tea Party movement came up.
Oh, yeah.
Almost at the instant. It didn't come up when Bush was in office, but it came up Inauguration Day. I'm pretty sure Inauguration Day was a day.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Tea Party actually said. Now, Captain has some words as well. Captain.
Well, just to interject briefly, you know, we have the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says, you know, you have the right to bear arms, but it also says you have the right to protect yourself in case a government becomes a reign of tyranny. Now,
wait a minute. I don't think it says exactly.
Well, not exactly like that. But in case the government breaks down, okay?
No, it says the well-regulated militia.
Now, the captain is correct on that, though.
Yes.
That was the Second Amendment has been bastardized. It was about people having guns for fear of a uprise in the government.
Yes.
So he's not that's been touted around quite a bit for the last couple of days.
Wait a minute. Gentlemen, let's as always, we should go to the text. hold on, come on. Let's see. Go ahead. I mean, you know, continue. But while we're talking, I'm going to look for the text of the
Bill. Bring up the text.
I'm just waiting. Let me go to another one. This thing is just like
Captain. Continue with your
yeah.
Cool. the diatribe.
The bridge version. So, you know, Obama may symbolize that to a lot of folks. You know, that's all I'm saying. He may symbolize that for a lot of folks, so they went out and got guns. You know?
Oh, I'm quite sure that, you know, he, you know, the moment he got in there, he was like the worst thing that ever happened, you know. Okay, come on.
All right, actually, you know what? I want to go to a musical break. We do try to take a little breathers before we during our discourse. When we come back, I want to talk about this, but I want to also segue into...
Okay, I have Article 2. Article
right.
2, Bill of Rights. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Repeat. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Now, what does a well-regulated militia mean?
Huh? Well, see, now, that has often been a bone of contention. You know, what does that actually mean? Does that mean something controlled by the state? Does that mean something controlled by the community? What, I mean, like, what is a well-regulated militia? I would suspect that you just can't go out and do anything, whatever that you want with your arms. I mean, like, we do have there was something, I forgot what the law was passed here in the district, where the district was basically almost blocking anybody, the Heller case. The district was blocking anybody from getting handguns, and the Supreme Court said, no, people have a right, you know, to bear arms, you know, to have guns for their protection. However, the Supreme Court also said that there are reasonable controls over that. You know, there are rights to the state has a right for reasonable controls over guns, which is what everybody's going to invoke now. You can have a gun. You're not going to be able to have a goddamn assault rifle. You know, you're not going to be able to have a magazine that can, like, wipe out a whole village. That's what's going to happen now.
Well, that's another thing, too. You know, when we talk about when the Constitution was written, you know, at the time you're talking about bayonets shotguns.
Yeah.
We're not talking about, as you just said, you know, semi-automatic weapons that are really meant for mass destruction.
Oh, yeah. There's no reason to have an assault rifle.
You know,
not unless you want to kill a lot of people.
You know, you're not going to use an AK-47 to kill a deer.
No.
You know, so.
No more than you would use an AR-15 Bushmaster, which is what that guy used up in Connecticut.
Well, I'm wondering if there's going to be has there been an increase in gun sales for the Bushmaster? That's all I've been hearing for the last couple of days.
Oh,
is
I think
the Bushmaster.
There has been. Well, I know there's been an increase in sales for guns generally, but I don't know about the Bushmaster. They might, because there might be. I don't know about that, though.
All right, quickly, let's go to a quick, and I do mean quick, musical break. When we get back, I do want to talk. It's still on this subject, but from a slightly different perspective. With the Alabama football player that called the president the N-word, which I'm pretty sure he's heard quite a few times since his presidency and maybe
mm-hmm.
even before that. Wiley was, you know, in essence really giving a eulogy to these kids that were killed. I guess the football game was to take precedence over the death of these children. So I'm finding more and more reasons
mm-hmm.
to believe that this gun stuff is not going to go away. If people can't even pay reverence for these 20 kids because football is more important, what does that mean? I mean, you know, what does that mean? Incredible. Incredible. All right, we'll be back. This is Willing and Able. Willing and Able by Prince. We'll be back in a few moments, folks. Let's groove.
And I'm able, ready to place my heart on the table. There's a king in the desert and a queen or two. They ain't nothing. Hey. Two brothers, Will and Abel. On this side, it says, Will and over here, it says, all right. What? Will and what's his brother's name?
Okay, we're back once again. That was Willing and Able live by His Royal Badness Prince. You're listening to Africa featuring Captain Kirk with Norman Kelly, our political contributor. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Now, I do want to segue. We're still somewhat on the Sandy Hook deal, but now we're on the racial element of this thing. And even another tier level of the racial connection with this Alabama football player who desperately wanted to see the NFL Monday night football game. I believe it was Monday night.
Sunday. I think it was Sunday.
Sunday. And he tweeted out, actually, it was a number of folks tweeted in anger having to use the N-word. And, you know, basically saying, get your blankety-blank off the screen because we want the game to come on. I don't care about these kids. You know, this 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's go to this clip briefly. This is from the Young Turks, the sports edition of Young. I didn't even know Young Turks actually has a sports, I guess a sports section as well. So this is Young Turks Sports on the racial tweets. Hold on.
The most significant sports story of the evening was the decision by NBC to cut away from the Sunday Night Football, the Patriots and the Niners.
The right decision.
In the first quarter to take Barack Obama's speech to the interfaith ceremony in Newtown, Connecticut. I guess in the pregame show they said they were going to do it. And then they did it in the first quarter, and Obama spoke eloquently and movingly for, I don't know, 15 minutes, something like that. NBC said at this crawl at the beginning, if you want to continue watching the game, you can go to NBC Sports Channel, which most cable systems carry.
NBC Sports Network and CNBC.
Right,
and
CNBC.
They said it twice.
Everybody's got cable has one of these. Some people don't have cable, and we're forced to not watch football for 15 minutes. That must have been off. People take to Twitter to express their disappointment with the decision to carry the president and not carry football. I will now read some of those tweets. It'll make you feel really good and proud to be an American. But the good news is, by the way, racism pretty much dead in this country. And forgive the language. In fact, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, you should. Read it. You should.
Although I'm being a hypocrite on this. Take that N off the TV. We want to watch football.
That was tweeted by a North Alabama football player, a Division I football player.
Well, shouldn't be on the team anymore.
Now he's gone. Yeah, he's
Obama,
gone.
You stupid sand and get off my TV. You're just making families hurt and miss their kids more. And I want to watch football.
Because your priorities mean so much.
You almost had a nice sentiment, but then we all realized that the real reason was that you want to watch football. Really can't even watch Sunday Night Football because our N Prez has to talk, really. That guy, by the way, lifts a lot of weights.
Brandon Ortiz?
Brandon Ortiz, yeah. I don't want to see some shortened N-word making a speech. I want to watch the 49ers beat the Patriots. What the F is this N doing on my screen? I want football. Wow, they took off Sunday Night Football to watch this Obama talk about the shooting. I can't even follow the rest of it. Obama can eat shit trying to make a speech during the football game. Unacceptable. You have to be effing, you have to be fucking kidding me on Obama, you stupid. It's football time in America, not time to give a speech. You fuck.
God, these people are so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
So stupid.
Damn N-word, take up my football time. This N-word interrupted the football game. Fuck you, Obama, and your stupid speech interrupting the NFL. I like that he hashtagged the NFL so the NFL would see it and think, oh, well, we have an angry fan. F you, Obama, for broadcasting this shit now. You literally suck balls. No?
All right, folks, I think you get the gist. A game that was from the Young Turks Sports Edition. Excuse the expletives, but sometimes you have to have this harsh language so you know exactly what's out here.
Well, you know, that's your NRAA crowd right there. All those people who are probably voicing that kind of sentiment, that's probably your NRAA crowd right there.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, he's from the southern region. It doesn't always have to be the southern mm-hmm. region, but I take it that it's probably from the southern region.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose your argument. You lose your argument because, first of all, there isn't any reason to call the President of the United States an N if you're going to respect the office of the President of the United States. But be that as it may, this was during a mock or a pre-eulogy on the part of the president
mm-hmm.
to acknowledge the death of these children. And we're talking about
it was the interfaith service. That's what
right.
it was.
And we're talking about white children. So these, if we want to be tribal, if we're going to be tribal, I don't want to be tribal in this mm-hmm. instance, really. But if we're going to be tribal, these are your white, precious white babies, perfect children, as many people have described them. They were perfect, and he was giving respect to what had happened, addressing it. I mean, how could he get around it? If he didn't do it, it would have been foul. So he had to do it. And what's even crazier is that you're putting a football game ahead of the most heinous act thus far of this year and maybe of all time at this point right now
mm-hmm.
in this country. So, mm-hmm. I mean, when you see this, I'm inclined to believe there's no hope. There's no hope for the guns. I mean, if we're going to try to get a hold of these guns, I mean, why bother if this is the public doesn't even want to mourn.
Well, just
put aside a few moments.
Well, that's an aspect of the public. It's not the full public.
Yeah, but to have a few moments to deal with this travesty, if they can't even give you 15 minutes, then what does it mean? What's the purpose? It is madness, Norman.
Well, it is. I mean, look, I've told somebody at where I'm where my production office is at, that the Enlightenment is over with in this country. It may come back again, but the United States was born of the Enlightenment, reason, trying to understand what the hell is going on. That's over with. This country has Americans have increasingly become irrational and superficial. Americans were never an overtly intellectual people. However, we were never an overtly stupid people also. We were a serious people. We have done some serious things. But I think we have become increasingly just a shallower and shallower people, and irrational. And this is what we're looking at. When you have people like Newt Gingrich and all these other people running around talking about the reason why this stuff is happening is because there's not any God in the schools, you have to ask yourself, when God was in the schools, you had a whole series of acts that were heinous. There was something on Slate today that talked about how a school was bombed in 1927. Somebody took a bomb and bombed the school in 1927. And this is before the Supreme Court came up with that act that removed, you know, school prayer.
I want the captain to kind of weigh in on this, but remember the four little girls that were bombed in that church during the civil rights movement.
Right.
In a church. And beyond that, think about all those cross burnings. A cross burning.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a reign of terroristic activity. But see, all that goes out the window.
Captain, what are your thoughts?
Here's the problem with texting. Here's the problem with Facebook. Here's the problem with Twitter. And here's the problem with anything else that operates that quickly. You're operating so quick, so once you get an emotional response, you're just not thinking. And then you show the world how stupid you really are, how racist you really are. And that's the reality of what's going on at this given point. Now, here's the thing. Now, if this was Bush, what would the tweets have been? It would have been asshole, you know, that sort of thing, you know, ignoramus. Or maybe they can't even get that far, you know, because they lack intelligence. They couldn't say ignoramus, you know, but along those lines, you know, that's what it would have been. So we went from that to where we're getting the N-word at this given point. And no one is doing any form of thinking whatsoever. That maybe I put this out here and then tomorrow is not going to be the same as it was today because I put this out here. Something just to think about.
Since you brought up the Facebook thing, let's segue into another element with, you know, this is a fearsome thing with the Obama presidency and with Obama's second term, because now you really saw the coalition of people of color.
It really wasn't,
and this is what I mean by what's happening with the restaurant thing in Texas.
This is why
I think there's a fearsome thing going on with the majority culture.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing them react in a certain manner based on what this gentleman did in Texas. Now, what I mean by that, you had a coalition of minorities really coming on strong into getting this black president a second term. You saw gays, women, Latinos, Asians, and black folk. Literally, you saw minority. You could throw in youth and everyone, the prototypical quintessential white male demographic. They did not play the role of this that they once did. And I think that is frightening. And when you hear that by 2050, which is not that long from now, you really get into it. 2050, this is going to be a majority minority country. Literally the Browning of America.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have this man. His name is Eddie Nimbator, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Eddie Nimbator, Thailand-born restaurateur. Now, I want to read what he says. He talking about Facebook. People are just too. They go straight, as the captain so aptly said. They go straight from their synapses to the computer screen. There's no in between.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Literally no filter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what he says. And I, I hate for this person to lose his restaurant, but it may end up being that way. He says, "I'm failing to give a damn about the Connecticut shooting," wrote the Thailand-born Nimbator on Friday. "I don't care if a bunch of white kids got killed. F post-racial BS." I'm giving you the edited version.
Mm-hmm.
When kids from minority groups get shot, nobody cares. When Israel launched missiles at the school on Gaza, everybody was too busy playing with themselves. I'm giving you another edited version. Playing with themselves. Why should I care about people who don't give a damn about me? Personal responsibility, right? Now, you know, hey, okay, go see you further.
Okay.
Later adding, "If you don't like me or my opinion, I suggest you
suggest to you to unfriend me and F off. I'm pretty much sick of some people telling me what to think, or how to feel today. And if you don't like my foods, F off and eat someplace else. I may end up having, because from my understanding, he's in an area of Texas that is very Tony, very much around college-educated white
people. Right.
So these people know, you know, they're not elderly. They're tuned into Facebook. They're tuned into Gawker, because I believe the site Gawker reported this. So
right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to boycott this person's restaurant. Now, honestly, the death of children, irrespective of race, must be acknowledged. I cannot ride with him on that. I can't ride with him on that. But as a fellow man of color, I would have been a hell of a lot more politically correct about saying what needed to be said.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what he says has a great deal of truth in it. You just can't defecate on children.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be that dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
But,
gentlemen, I'm going to have to say goodbye.
We appreciate your support, Norman. Thanks. You know, next month we'll see you again if we can. We appreciate
it. Okay, so gentlemen and listeners, have a good holiday. Happy New Year. Good night.
Right back at you. Thank you. So what are your thoughts on this, Captain? I mean, he's going to suffer.
Well, he definitely is, because it's going to mount. You know how things go on the Internet. It gets viral. It gets bigger and bigger, and bigger outlets start to write about it. Then he has this, you know, snowball effect. But this is what I wanted to say, just to expound on that. Now, you can remember years ago when we would write letters, actually take a pen and write a letter. And then sometimes what you would actually do, get upset with somebody and write a nasty letter. And by the time you finish the letter, you have to look at the letter, read the letter, put it in the envelope, and put a stamp. So you know what you end up doing? You end up ripping the letter up and say, I'm not going to send that to the person, because you had time to think about it. You see? There's no thinking going on whatsoever. You understand? It's just a reaction. It's like someone smacking you in your face and you smack them right back. It's too quick. Communication at times, unless, of course, it's face-to-face, probably for most of these idiots should not be this quick, because it bypasses any form of conscious thought. Just think back to the time when people were actually writing a lot of letters. You might have a loved one. You might have a girlfriend. You might have a boss. You say, you know what? I'm just going to write the boss this letter. And he's going to know. Not typing, because typing is faster. I'm just going to write him a letter. And you go, you know what? No way. Rip that up. I'm going to lose my job. Because you got a chance to think about it. You see? There's no thinking going on whatsoever. So you're going to get what you get in this day and age. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
Yeah, you know, I've been meaning to get, once again, Dr. John McHorter. In the early stages of the show, I was able to get him on the show. For those who are unfamiliar with Dr. McHorter, he's an author, he's a linguist, he's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's often mistaken for being a Republican or a conservative. He has a conservative bent, but I think he's more of a self-described progressive, but he has a conservative bent. Anyway, the reason why I'm mentioning him is because he recently wrote this piece. I think it might have been for the Daily News. I'm not sure, but I do remember him reading a piece about in his belief that racism is waning. Racism is waning in his country. I'm just not so sure, and I really want to get him back on to address that particular article, because when you start to see this kind of stuff, and again, this might be what the term "they hate that hate" produced. You know, there a 1959 special that introduced it's the title of a actual news piece, "The Hate That Hate Produced," dating back to 1959, that introduced Malcolm X to the mainstream media. It was a report on the Nation of Islam dating back to 59. And it was entitled The Hate Produced. And it really scared people, scared blacks and whites, because, again, we're talking about really the nascent period, the nascent civil rights period, 1959. So here you go with a certain trajectory for black empowerment, black rights, and then you have this frightening well-spoken black person, fearless. And that was called the hate produced. And this is that title of that piece, of that news piece, reminds me of what Mr. Nimbator, not that I'm excusing him, but, you know, when you hear the N-word being levied toward the president over a situation that is so beyond the – I mean, it's incredible that someone could bypass this tragedy for the sake of a football game and to be public about it. It's one thing to say this in your living room, and not that it's right then either, but to say it publicly for the world to literally see, and for so many people to do this, for people to see, you almost feel like, well, Nimbator has a point. There is such a thing as the hate that hate produced. You know, are the minorities supposed to just take this and not have a rebuttal? I don't know. I that's another question I like to even to the captain. I mean, how even keeled are minorities supposed to be if we live in a world where these kind of things are levied even during a service over a tragedy? For white kids, mind you. For white kids. Not that it should matter. If the kids were black and he was the eulogy, there's no purpose. There's no reasoning behind it. But coincidentally, they happen to be white kids, and you still didn't give a damn.
Well, something I want to address before I address that. You know, when they say racism is waning in the country, they like to base things on their statistical analysis. Now, let me just talk about that briefly. They say we have a black president, there's more interracial dating, you know, that sort of thing. And then they start to look at the demographics, they say there's more Latin people coming in, there's more, you know, that sort of mixing, the blending of the race. And then when you see these magazines, they'll show somebody who has darker skin, not necessarily what we would call all the way black, if we're going to get into that, you know, as someone being very beautiful now. So that's what they use. But there's one time, normally statistical analysis and empirical analysis matches, but the empirical data does not match the statistical analysis, in my opinion. And I'm pretty sure the listener agrees, in your day-to-day what you're seeing. And also the Twitter here, that could be used as statistical analysis and also could be used as empirical data. So those two probably match. So it's just something to think about. It's just something to think about. Now, when it comes to minorities, that's us, that's D. Burt, that's the captain, and probably a lot of you listeners, I don't know how much of this that we're supposed to take where it's just supposed to be okay and everything is just supposed to be all right. I don't know. I don't know, you know, but at the same time, you know, what are we actually supposed to do in that type of scenario, that type of situation? It can be an uprising. That's not going to work. You know, so in a way, we can protest. We can get to Twitter, we can get to shows such as Afro Nerd Radio, but, you know, that's really it. The powers that be are still the powers that be at the end of the day. That's the reality of it, even though the president is classified as the powers that be. He is commander in chief. And his minions are looking like they're starting to rebel. Just something to think about. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
All right. You know what? I'm not going to go to a musical break yet, but I do want to pick up on a few more stories that we left on the table from the last broadcast, and actually one that I had a conversation behind the scenes, Captain, with Mr. Starks, and he brought this to my attention. I'm going to play a clip of it. And this is a game referencing Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is more of a cultural issue. We're going to get away from the Sandy Hook thing, because even I have had my fill of it. The tragedy sometimes it's a rough road. I'm sure this is going to be with us for a while. You know, it is a horror show. But actually, Mr. Starks told me of this situation where a weather girl, an African-American weather woman, to be more politically correct, a young weather woman who wore her hair in a natural short Caesar haircut African style.
Yes.
That she ended up losing her job. Now, what's interesting is that essentially she responded to a viewer on Facebook who took umbrage with her hairstyle. The caveat is, according to her employer's rules, to the station's rules, you're not supposed to engage on Facebook. You're not supposed to be responding. So she responded in a respectful way, but she still responded because of this hair issue. I think she's an attractive woman. I don't have a problem with the hairstyle, but someone did. So I'm going to play this clip. It's, I believe, actually, it's not Melissa Harris-Perry's show, but Melissa Harris-Perry was, Dr. Perry was on the show because it was another MSNBC show. She was on there along with this young lady to discuss her firing and to discuss this whole hair issue. So let's go to this quick clip, and then we'll unpack it for our audience. One moment.
About Rhonda Lee, a meteorologist in Shreveport, Louisiana, fired after responding to a racially charged comment on her TV station's Facebook page. A viewer by the name of Emmett Vascoku posted a comment saying, "The black lady that does the news is a very nice lady. The only thing is she needs to wear a wig or grow some more hair. I'm not sure if she is a cancer patient, but still, it's not something myself that I think looks good on TV. What about letting someone, a male, have waist-long hair do the news? What about that?" Well, days later, Rhonda responded via the Facebook page saying, "I am the black lady to which you are referring. I'm sorry you don't like my ethnic hair. And no, I don't have cancer. I am very proud of my African-American ancestry, which includes my hair. Conforming to one standard isn't what being American is about, and I hope you can embrace that." Rhonda went on to thank the viewer for watching. Well, Rhonda Lee joins me now live from Shreveport, and joining us to sound off on this is Melissa Harris-Perry, host of MSNBC's Melissa Harris-Perry Show. So, ladies, it's good to have you here. And, Rhonda, your response certainly seemed reasonable enough, kind as well, when you thank them for watching your program. So explain to all of us, why did the station fire you? Did they explain it properly? Was it just about this response issue?
Well, initially I was I actually brought that particular comment to the attention of management. I sent them a screen grab at the time, and I told my manager, Randy, at the time, well, you know, it seems like I'm okay with not everybody liking me. That's fine. But a lot of our comments as of late have come across more racist than anything. So I would like to help with getting a policy together so that we can, one, block offensive posts like this, and two, maybe start a good dialogue for educating people and getting a good discourse going on the web. So then the next few days after that, I was called into our general manager's office, and I was told that, wow, we got lucky this time. And I got a little confused at first. I'm like, lucky? What do you mean? Apparently, according to the GM, it could have gone much worse. It could have gotten much more ugly. So we got really lucky. And he told me, next time, if there's a controversial post like this, what I need to do is to thank the viewer and then bring it to the attention of management, and they would do something about it.
You did
it.
Go. You thanked the viewer within that statement, Rhonda, and I want to get in the WTBS statement on their behalf, saying on November 28th of 2012, mm-hmm. KTBS dismissed two employees for repeated violation of the station's policy or written procedure, that is. Ms. Rhonda Lee was let go for repeatedly violating that procedure and after being warned multiple times of the consequences if her behavior continued. Were you warned about some type of ongoing behavior that was creating a file of marks against you that could lead up to termination?
No, sir. This is that first remark was the first time I had ever replied outside of giving a forecast. And then the second one, the other reason, well, the main reason why I was terminated was only the second time I had ever replied in that way at all. And so the repeated part, I asked them during my termination, you know, like, when was this repeated part? Well, you know, there was the first time in October, mm-hmm. and now there's this time. And that was it. That was all. I've never even seen that email. As far as I know, that's what I can tell you. There is no written policy. So that was my first and only time that I've seen that.
All right, Melissa, I want to bring you into the conversation. When I first read up about this and what happened with Rhonda, I was really taken aback, and I know you were too. The trials and tribulations, the evolution of black women and their hair has been the subject of documentaries by people like Chris Rock. And I want to play, because I know you've devoted part of your show to this very topic. Take a look.
And it feels like there's no hairstyle you can choose that isn't signaling something to somebody, right? So if you wear a relaxer, that's somehow signaling something. Is this sufficiently political? Is this just working out our emotions? Or is there something meaningful about as African-American women are trying to think through our self-presentation?
Let's talk about that, the thinking through of the self-presentation. Didn't Rhonda have a right to respond? I mean, asked, the viewer asked questions, and Rhonda provided answers.
Yeah, I want to say several things here. I mean, I just want to be really clear that the space where we're talking about African American women and their hair is a very, very fraught space. And the idea that Rhonda's employer was so unaware of how important it was to actually have a conversation about this. I mean, television is, of course, a visual medium. So we make all kinds of choices about what we do and don't wear, what we do and don't do with our hair, you know, how much makeup we put on before we show up on television. But the idea that there's only one sort of style of hair or one version of what would constitute beautiful or attractive hair has been an incredibly powerful tool for controlling African American women's self-presentation in all kinds of spaces, especially corporate spaces. Now, I'm actually not a big fan of the Chris Rock film, and one of the reasons is simply because I think it's so important for black women to speak for themselves about their hair. And so what I appreciate about what Rhonda did here was that in a very calm, consistent, and I think educating manner, she spoke about what her hair is, what the choices were, the reasons for it, and then she thanked the viewer for having a response.
One thing I want to get out there, Rhonda, is that Jennifer Livingston, a news anchor from Wisconsin, was chastised via Facebook for someone, a viewer, about her weight. She used it as a teachable moment to fire back and editorialize what it
meant. All right, folks, enough of that. Again, that was Melissa Harris Perry and the young meteorologist / weather woman that was ultimately fired because of this discrepancy with her hair / her insistence on dealing on Facebook. When I spoke to from the honor guard from the boardroom, I say that colloquially, with our friend Mr. Starks, we agreed on this because we've spoken about this before. There's a couple of things, and AfroNerd, actually, the concept of AfroNerd has a lot to do with what I'm going to say. Black folks are going to have to learn to be comfortable in their own skin. They're going to have to learn to be comfortable in their own skin. Now, what does that mean? She was wearing this natural hairstyle, which is fine. Whatever you do, someone is not going to like what you do. Not everything that someone says to you, you should have to respond to. There are things that go on with our show. People are always sending us stuff about what we should say, what we shouldn't say, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. We have our own mission, our own mission statement, and we're going to follow through with it. We appreciate whatever you want to say to us, as long as it's respectful. But even if it's disrespectful, I'm not really going to respond to you. But because many black women and black people in general, you know, if you want to talk about other things, but in this particular issue with hair, she was so sensitive about her hair that she couldn't let it go. They had a policy no matter what was going on. It just happened to be the hair thing. It could have been anything. Do not engage on Facebook. But because of the hair thing, she had to engage because it's a bug. It's an insecurity. Why the hell do you care what some strange man thinks about your hair? As long as it's not, as long as the people at your job have you in that position and they're okay with your appearance and you're collecting a check, you shouldn't care. But many, not all black women, but many black women have created erector sets on top of their heads. And they've made it such an issue that it's an awkwardness about it. It's made them paralyzed. This woman is paralyzed, and so many black women are paralyzed about their beauty and paralyzed about their hair that they don't know which way to go. And it's going to have to end up somewhere. And this is this could be a general conversation, Captain, about our dysfunction. But it's going to have to be some place, some reckoning, where black folks get comfortable with themselves, figure out a plan, and execute it. You're going to have to do something because it's uncomfortable. I know personally there are some black women that I will not deal with socially, romantically, whatever, if they come up to me going into hair issues. Don't discuss hair issues with me. Don't talk about your insecurities or despair with me. Time to move along. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, let me get this right. Her employer says do not engage anybody on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Then she engages on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they warn her. Right? That's correct, right? Then
yep.
She does it again. Then she's let go. Right? That's what happened
yep.
there, right? So, in essence, she was told not to engage with anybody on Facebook. Then she got emotional and disregarded the person who cuts her check or, you know, of course, direct deposit these days into your account. You understand? Disregarded that. And then now she's on another show talking about why she got let go. Is that right? Did I get that right?
You got it right, but it's being conflated, Captain, with her hair. The hair is being conflated with what she wasn't supposed to do.
Yes, I get that. I get that. But you see, what I'm doing is simplifying it because, you know, and that's what I have a tendency to do, to make things real simple. I'm going to work. The employer tells me, do not go on Facebook, so I'm not going to go on Facebook. If I see someone talking about, oh, I don't like the way I look, the way I can't get emotional because it's more important for me to have my job than it is to engage this person. Simple logic, you know. The point I'm making is what I make all the time. What happens when you get emotional? Emotion always bypasses conscious thought. We say it here all the time on this show. You're not thinking when you get emotional. Black man, if you're running around angry with your fist balled up, you're not thinking. Anger is emotion. It's an emotion. You're not thinking. This right here, the person got emotional about their hair, lost their job. That's simple.
Well, and you know something else? Listen, we spoke about this a few months ago with the talented, young, beauteous Gabby Douglas. That black women now, folks, were on Twitter, infamous Twitter, going from their synapses straight to the keyboard, no filter, and no acknowledgement of this young lady's accomplishment, and went right to the condition of her hair when everyone else wasn't paying attention to it. It is a psychosis. Now I see that her hair is always like ultra perfect now, probably pieces of glue and all kinds of stuff, whatever the erector set is of them for the moment. And she's attractive
too.
She's an attractive girl, but she would be, but she would definitely be. Someone's going to try to give her or try to give this 16-year-old girl a complex. We are walking complexes, Captain, and it has to stop. It has to stop because it's textbook psychosis. This woman responded to this man because it was a bugaboo about her hair. She couldn't let it go. She could not let it go. I've seen people do this before. They can't. The Oracle talks about this with, like, Judge Judy. Judge Judy would tell a plaintiff or a defendant, please let the other party speak. Your turn, then the next person's turn. That person will not take instruction. They will overspeak the judge. They will overspeak the opponent, the adversary, when told not to. He said, listen, I'm going to kick you out of here unless you stop speaking. The person cannot stop speaking, and they will lose the case. They will lose the case even though they might be right. Even the judge will tell you, you could win this if you're silent. The person can't do it. Captain, they can't do it. No self-control. I can't stand people who have no self-control. If someone tells me, D-Bert, listen, we will give you, and this is my car of the moment, we will give you a turquoise 1968 fully laced out, chromed out engine Pontiac GTO, perfect mint condition, if you remain silent for 2 minutes. If you speak before the 2 minutes, you will lose out on getting a car. You better believe I will follow instructions to the T, Captain. But there's some people, they cannot do it. This woman could not follow instructions because it was a hair issue. It was a female situation, hair insecurity. She had to respond to the stranger who, under logical circumstances, you should not care about. It should not even have registered on your plane. It's an insanity. It is an insanity. Kathy, we have barely a minute. Any thoughts? Am I wrong on this?
And she was also very nervous with her speaking. Because she, you know, deep down inside, she knows she just messed up. Very nervous with her speaking. You know? Because she speaks for a living, too. So there was no need for her to be that nervous. Just, oh, boy.
You're nervous when you're on shaky ground, Captain.
Yes.
That's what it is. You're nervous when you're on shaky ground. All right, Captain, we got about a minute. Listen, folks. Shouting out Norman Kelly. Appreciate him coming through. Shouting out Sergio Mims. We'll do it next time, sir, with the captain in attendance, hopefully, when you're visiting New York. Folks, we'll be back again on Sunday. We'll do it again. You know, we failed to mention or give our opinions on that Who is Black or Black in America CNN piece, Captain. I got to talk about this. I have to talk about this. All right, that's enough. All right, folks, we'll be back on Sunday. It's been a pleasure.
Make it move like I wanna move with them horns. Let them play with them strings while I spit the life for kings. Put a cud in it, stud with it, we at it. Dudes that was meant to have it. Fans wanna reach out and grab it. I'm just an ordinary man with an unordinary lifestyle. Seen early, I would live as a child. I was conceived a mistake, but through God is really all it takes for me to be born and make the earth shake. This was raised from the bottom. So before them plain clothes got them, soak up the four square mouths to pop them. It's me in the flesh, here to put them rumors to rest and let you celebrate hip-hop's best. From the womb to the tomb, hit the game real soon with a tune that's gonna take sun straight to the moon. Ta-da, see it's my turn now.
All competitors bow. All you're saying is wow.
All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything it takes to hold me down. All I see.
The pedigree to own a whole catalog. All I'm singing is, don't sleep on me, dog. I really walk them streets there, school them young wolves. CL is slay anything in his way. Okay, it's all about the aura I project, that ultimate connect, and how you see me as a man of respect, right? So it's like a mutual agreement. All your feet is in the cement. Learn the rules, let you earn your pay. Sure, nosy than you think of what it cost me, to how the world forced me to kill them softly, baby. How the music sound from the basement, and how the word bless me. Who let you see the fame don't impress me, dig it? Why it's cut from a different cloth, blood is setting off. Keep a real nice piece in the loft, easy. Anytime you can hold your head, then you can hold some bread and relate to what CL said.
Yes. All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything it takes to hold me down. All I see is the way it gotta be. Everything you see me hit the channel. This is my vibe.
On the turntable, seal on the M-I-C, Philly on up to the N-Y-C, a breakdancer's guard, tags in the train yard, wild style fat lace, thugs locked up from a 1980s case, goons with them grown kids, used to them long bits, meet you on the dance floor, slash the visit did, a lot for the rep to, and see it all make sense, if I'm the king, yeah, that should make you the fresh prince, send for the driver, you looking at the real soul survivor, like my man J Period mixtape, the man on fire. Featuring the guest that Jeff hosts. You marvel at the up close and personal meeting of the minds. You should read the signs. This is what reclines. The thoughts in my lazy boy fit like a hand in glove from the city of brotherly love.
All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything it takes to hold me down. All I see. My point.